Okay, we are on the book of Exodus, and it's the sixth chapter, and sixth chapter only.
But the Lord said to Moses, "Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will send them out, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land." God spoke to Moshe and said to him, "I am the Lord. I appeared to Abraham, to Yitzhak, to Jacob, as God Almighty. But by my name, the Lord, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they lived as sojourners. Moreover, I have heard the groaning of the people of Israel, whom the people of Mitzrayim hold as slaves, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the people of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burden of the people of Mitzrayim, and I will deliver you from slavery to them, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great acts of judgment. I will take you to be my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God, who has brought you out from under the burdens of the people of Mitzrayim. I will bring you into the land that I swore to Abraham, to Yitzhak, to Jacob, and I will give it to you as a possession. I am the Lord." Moshe spoke thus to the people of Israel, but they did not listen to Moshe because of their broken spirit and harsh slavery. So the Lord said to Moshe, "Go in, tell Pharaoh, the king of Mitzrayim, to let the people of Israel go out to his land." But Moshe said to the Lord, "Behold, the people of Israel have not listened to me. How then shall Pharaoh listen to me, for I am of uncircumcised lips?" But the Lord spoke to Moshe and Aharon and gave them a charge about the people of Israel and about Pharaoh, king of Mitzrayim, to bring the people of Israel out of the land of Mitzrayim. These are the heads of the fathers' houses, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, Hanok, Halu, Hezron, Carmi. These are the clans of Reuben. The sons of Shimon, Yemuel, Yamin, Ohad, Yachin, Zohar, and Shaul, the son of a Canaanite woman. These are the clans of Shimon. These are the names of the sons of Levi, according to their generations, Gershon, Kohat, and Merari. And the years of the life of Levi being 137 years. The sons of Gershon, Libni and Shimei by their clans. The sons of Kohat, Amram, Izhar, Hebron, and Uziel. And the years of the life of Kohat were 133 years. And the sons of Merari, Mali and Mushi. These are the clans of the Levi according to their generations. Amram took his wife Jochebed as his father's sister, and she bore him Aharon and Moshe, years of the life of Amram being 137 years. The sons of Yizhar, Korah, Nepheg, and Zikri. The sons of Uzael, Mishael, Elizphan, and Sitri. Aharon took as his wife Elisheva, the daughter of Aminadab, the sister of Nashon, and she bore him Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Itamar. The sons of Korah, Asir, Elkanah, and Abiasa. These are the clans of the Korah. Eleazar, Aharon's son, took as his wife one of the daughters of Putiel, and she bore him Phinehas. These are the heads of the fathers' houses of the Levites by their clans. These are the Aharon and Moshe, to whom the Lord said, "Bring out the people of Israel from the land of Mitzrayim by their hosts." It was they who spoke to Pharaoh, king of Mitzrayim, about bringing out the people of Israel from Egypt. This Moshe and this Aharon. On the day when the Lord spoke to Moshe in the land of Mitzrayim, the Lord said to Moshe, "I am the Lord. Tell Pharaoh, king of Mitzrayim, all that I say to you. But Moshe said to the Lord, Behold, I am of uncircumcised lips. How will Pharaoh listen to me?
What is your input? What is your thinking?
I'm just curious there, verse 12, and then ending there in verse 30, that he's concerned about uncircumcised lips.
Okay, we'll talk about that.
There are a lot of people that are very distressed over the issue of God's name, but it appears that my name, YHVH or Yod Heh Vav Heh, was not known to Abraham or Isaac or Jacob or all of these people or Adam. All of these people knew God, but they didn't know that name.
Okay.
That would mean that was not as critical as some people might think.
All right.
Just out of curiosity, though, when Eve said, I have gained a man from the Lord, Yod Heh Vav Heh. I hear it seeing said that they didn't know the name, but yet they knew the name. Didn't know the reputation of them, or?
Anything puzzling besides uncircumcised lips and the name? Yes.
Something that stood out to me is, here, God already talked about how he was going to strengthen Pharaoh's heart. But here, it struck me as the reason why, and sometimes people look at how God dealt with the Egyptians and they think he's a horrible God. But for the Israelites to not even listen to Moses at all, for them to be so they were so stuck where they were.
We'll talk about that one.
God had to use the adversary basically to get them to get up and go.
Because we on the outside, thousands of years later, because it's human nature, to pass judgment when it's uncalled for. Or to pass judgment, we think it's called for. That's what we do. But we weren't there. In this chapter, before I begin, sometimes it looks like a continual story flow over and over and over again. And so there are points where it says, Yahweh said unto. And that's done one. Then he says again in verse 6, God speaking again. And then we go on, and God speaks again in verse 13. And then God speaks again on verse 28. So there's a quote, more than just a conversation going on here. You remember last week, the last part of the fifth chapter. And Moses returned unto Yahuwah and said, Lord, wherefore hast thou done ill with these people? Why is it that you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh and spoke in thy name, he has dealt evil with this people. Neither have you delivered thy people at all. Now, that sounds like he was a little upset, right? Well, basically, I guess if you're sitting down there and it backfired on you, and you expected something else than what was really going to happen, it's natural human nature to say, God, you didn't do what you said you're going to do. Now, God speaks back. This is very fascinating because the very first statement is verse 1. And Yahweh spoke to Moses, I'm reading Old English now, Now shall thou, Moses, see that I will do to Pharaoh. Now I can see God raising his voice to Moses. Because Moses just accused him of not doing good and doing evil. Wow, pretty heavy stuff, right? And he says, For with a strong or a hardened hand shall he let them go. And with a strong or hardened hand shall he deliver them out of his hand. That is a strong arm or the hardened arm, the one that's got strength and endurance and cannot be broken. For in, of course, name. And then there's another break. Verse 2, Oh, now Yahweh comes back and he says, doesn't say Yahweh, he says, Elohim said unto Moses. So we have a statement of Yahweh saying something. Now we have a statement of Elohim saying something. We say, well, it's two different people. Well, no. It's a different event, different thinking. A little later on, and Moses said, God said to Moses, speak unto Moses and said to him, I Yahuwah. So he identified who he was. And then he said, verse 3, I will approach, I appeared unto Abraham and to Isaac and to Jacob by El Shaddai, but my name, Yahuwah, was not known to them. What does this statement just tell you? Who did not know that name? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He withheld his identification of what his name was to those three men. The God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob did not know that name. They knew him by what name? El Shaddai. Why would they know him by that name? The flood. So, when we reach and go back into Genesis chapter 1 and Genesis 2 and 3 and 4, we see the words, especially 2, 3 and 4. Now we see that Yod Hey Vav Hey showing up. Now, there's a period of time after the flood, something was transformed differently. The creator of heaven and earth was known as the destroyer. The one who deluged. The one who brought forth the rain. The one who destroyed all mankind and all animals, except that was on the ark. Now, did that mean that the sons, from that point on, did not know until and all the way until Moses' time? That's questionable, okay? Because it's very fascinating to realize that when Moses said to God, what is your name? They will not respond to me until I have your name. And he told them the name. And why would they ask that question? Go ahead.
Growing up in Mitzrayim, I'm sure they're familiar with a lot of different names of a lot of different gods. So what's different about this God that you're saying to listen to?
Okay. Any other thoughts?
They still knew the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They were still familiar with him. They knew that he would deliver them. There were promises that they still understood. And he would identify himself through that.
All right. Now, why was it important? Or was it just coincident? Or just because God had to answer Moses? Why did God say what he said? Go ahead.
Could it be because the Egyptians had so many gods and they all had names? Maybe the meaning in what God said
maybe
would communicate to them
okay.
The difference from all of the Egyptian gods.
So now we have, now we're talking about the house of Israel. We're not talking about the house of Greeks. We're not talking about the house of the Russians. We're not talking about the house of the Chinese because God's not dealing with them. He's talking about the house of Israel because according to, and I told you the very first chapter in Genesis, not third chapter it was, in this particular book of Exodus, it's all about instituting the promise of the covenant God made, El Shaddai made, with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now he's going to institute it. He's beginning to institute the promise and the commandment that he said he's going to do. Wow, why did it take so long? Because it's God's timing and no one else's. Why was it important for these people to understand or be heard or be told the name? Let's suppose they never heard of it. Okay, I'll grant you that. Why would they ask that question? Yes?
We have a difference in naming in our cultures, you know, in the Hebrew, name is based off function, hence Abraham, you have the blessed mm-hmm. father of many.
Now,
it's
when.
Not a title, it's a function.
When Yahweh spoke to Moses, What did he say when he was asked, what is your name? Did he say, Yod Hey Vav Hey? No, it's Aleph Hey Yod Hey. Aleph Hey Yod Hey. That's his name. Why is it Yod Hey Vav? Why do we have it? Because in grammar-wise, Moses had to say, in a sense, we'll get to that in a minute, he came, he came, he came. Basic breaking down, I've done this before with this word, with the old hey, vav, hey, breaking it down, and you'll find out those certain letters that's in that name that means to come. And we have this song we sing. Book of Revelation talks about that name. Who was and is to what? Come. In Hebrew, there is no to be. There's no such thing as is. No such thing as a was. It's become. The Hebrew word is to become. Not is. So when you're reading your scriptures, they've been italicized in there, and they use the word, because the Hebrew word is ani, which means I am. And we have to use that in our English because we don't know what else to say. He didn't say, when he says that Yahweh, I am Yahuwah, he's saying I, Yah, Yeah. It, yeah. It, yeah. What does those four words mean? When you break those down, those words that hit the Aleph, the Hey, the Yod, and the Hey. The Hey, the Yod, and the Hey is the root word, or root verb, means to become. The Hey, Yod, Hey. Yad, Ho, Yod, Hey. Now, when had it translated so it wouldn't sound like Moses was talking, he had to use a yod vav. Hey, oh, hey, vav, hey. Right? So it's one of those minor things to understand. But the root word, the verb base of his name is to come or to become. You'll find that, you research real heavy in the, yes.
Okay, yod, hey. Yod Hey means what? To come?
No, 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 no. Hey, Yod Hey. Just those three letters. Hey, Yod Hey. Yod Hey means to become. The base of his name is to come. That's why it says he who, and there's that verb shown in there, is. And then he was, that word was sown in, he came. So the verb's based upon to become. And so it's really not that hard to understand the word. It's just that when he says, been translated as I am that I am, it's not exactly what it says in actual Hebrew. So when he uses the word I am, or if it's translated to I am, it gets a little bit confusing because we have been programmed to think that Yod Hey Vav Hey is his name. Well, that's the past tense of something, not the present tense. But that's beside the point. But the issue here is, why would God, at this particular point, and don't, this is my personal belief, alright? I don't think God was caught off guard at all when Moses asked him, what is your name? I think it was well planned by God. Okay, I'm going to tell you. I'm coming. Oh. And I'm going to send you. But I'm coming. Now we have it in our English, right? We have what's called the first coming, and now we're waiting for the second coming. We use that in English. Yes.
Is Moses asking for his name similar to Jacob asking for his name? Is it a similar interaction?
Oh, I have to research that one. That's a good question. I have to go back and see, because Jacob didn't really ask that. I know it's been, because this is history after the fact. And so when they found out what to call him, then you find it written amongst that Abraham talked to Yahweh, Jacob talked to Yahweh, and Rebecca talked to Yahweh. It doesn't say that if we believe what God said. If we reject what it, that's okay. Whatever one wants to think. The reason why he had to be known as the destroyer, or the deluger one, the one that destroys things, is because that was what he brought forth. Now, this should tell us something. We opened up this thing, and it said, with a hard hand, or a strong hand, when's the last time God showed his strong hand to mankind? Before. There was a flood. Now, instead of what we think, well, I have to look and say, why would he say that? Because his strong arm, his hard arm, destroyed the world once before. What's he going to destroy here? All I think is destroy the Egyptians. Well, we have to be careful about that, because there's something else we have to look at and say, what does he mean by a strong hand? Pharaoh will let you go. Okay, because Pharaoh was a naughty guy. Naughty person. But God told Abraham, I'm going to send your descendants down there, and they're going to be put in really hard bondage. Hardship. And Abraham didn't like that. But what can you do about it? Nothing. We don't think that God had any hand in raising up this Pharaoh that did not know who Moses was. Because God said to Moses, they're all dead. They're all dead. Not one of them there knows you. They're all dead. Okay. So he went back. And because this great man of movie entertainment, we have this concept that the Pharaoh that Moses met face to face was his half-brother or step-brother. And that's why we have these cartoon prince of something or other there, because they were two wild kids in that cartoon, like reckless wild kids in the 21st century, 22nd century, whatever century it is, who just get in a hot motorcycle or a hot fast car, and they're so wealthy, so rich, they just tear things apart, and no one does anything because, well, they're the owners. It's a greater deception, in my personal opinion. And so I speak out about that. Forgive me. You've heard me say it before. Now, I want you to pay attention to something else. There's a lot of things here in this chapter which leads us up to something. And I'm sorry, what? Verse 3. I think it's 3. Yeah. When he said, I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob by El Shaddai, but my name, I was not known by them. So now, he said, verse 4, and I have also established what? Okay, do you remember the Apostle Paul? You know, New Testament? You know, the guy who wrote the book of Romans? He said, we are to establish something. The law. We are to institute and establish law within ourselves, not upon others. And so now he is going to establish, institute the covenant that he made with Abraham. This is what I said, the book of Exodus is not really so much about the Exodus leaving Egypt. It's about the covenant that God made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. In this very chapter, it tells you what they are. We'll get there when we get there. Then he says, okay, what was the covenant? Verse 4, to give them, that's what he told Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them, their descendants, the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage, where they were strangers. Who were strangers? Who were the strangers? Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They didn't own the land. They didn't take over the land. They weren't the ones that powered the land. Even Jacob's sons couldn't do it. Was it planned? Was it part of it? Because that was a covenant God made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, how is he going to institute that covenant? Well, he's got to bring them out of something. Yeah. That he put them in. That sounds weird. Unfair God, right? As I have, verse 5, I have heard the groanings of the children of Israel. And I remembered, or I'm going to institute now, I'm going to establish the covenant to bring them into the land that I promised Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. It's always those three names. All right? Very, very fascinating. Now let's go on down. Verse 6. Therefore, say unto the children of Israel, based on leadership, and I will bring, this is old English, you out from under the burden of the Egyptians, and I will rid you of their bondage, and I will redeem with a stretched out arm, that hard arm, with judgments. Okay. What did he talk about? That's the law stuff, right? I know a bunch of words, right? My object, what I try to do for you and for others, is let's talk about every word, especially that came out of his mouth. Right? He listed several things there, didn't he? And we kind of said, yeah, I got it. I understand it. Yeah, I got it. I know what it's all about. Well, it's true. But I'm here to, if I can do say anything else, here to you to, let's take a closer look. What did he mean to bring? Bring what? Bring them out. Okay. Bring them out to exit, to go forth. Now remember, the Israelites didn't want to leave. They just wanted the burden of these guys on their case eliminated. And they'd be happy thereafter. Remember, they complained later on over and over again. Why did you take us out of Egypt? Why did you take us out of Egypt? Why did you take us out of Egypt for? But they had a good life there, except for these guys. You know, just kill Pharaoh and his men, and we'll be happy again. Because that's what they're asking for. But that's not what God gave them. Because God was not interested, but they wanted. God was interested in establishing his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So he's going to bring them out. What's the next thing he said he's going to do? Under something. What is the word under? Burden. Under. Hebrew just basically means the lowest part. You're put down so low that how do you get out of that low point of despair and anguish? Anguish comes a little later. And so he says, I'm going to do that too. Then he says, I'm going to take the burden. Well, that's self-explanatory. Basically, it means in Hebrew, the burden of compulsory labor. You don't have a chance. I want to work with this guy. I want to work over here. Oh, I don't want to work today. They were not allowed to do that. Remember Pharaoh said 7 days? You'll work a nonstop. So, quote. Well, never mind. We won't get there. And this old English word of rib, that really means to sneak away. I will sneak away the house of Israel. Now, was it such a sneak away pact? The little that he just did it unknowingly, or caught everybody off guard? As we continue on reading through the book of Exodus, yes, even Pharaoh was surprised when they did not return. Then he sent his men out. It was a, quote, sneak. He snitched them right out from underneath. Something called a burden. Of course, in our world, in the physical world, where something physically taking place, it should tell us it's something that God is saying, I'm talking to you about spiritual stuff. Okay? What does it mean to redeem? To buy us back, okay? That's actually called redemption. Redeem means to do what? To buy a neighbor, a relative's property back. I'm going to buy property that belongs to you, and I'm going to buy it and give it back to you. That's the word, right? Yes.
That's why there's a relative that has the double portion. That way, if any of the other relatives have to sell their land, then they can redeem the land.
They redeem the land.
And, you know.
Yep. It was established before the covenant was established at Mount Sinai. And when we look at it on a spiritual basis, we may realize what his did. What was the price that he had, that he paid to get the people? They're not back yet. He still is going to do. What was the price he paid? Yeah, he said, I am going to redeem them. What price did he pay to redeem them? Firstborn of Egypt. All right, it's very important to know that because basically it's going to lean on something, not what the Egyptian people think they did. It's what God is trying and showing us. I'm going to lead you to one specific firstborn. Yes.
But last week we went through that Moses' firstborn almost got taken, and it sounds like the redemption value was transferred from one person to another.
Correct. Simple as that. Whose land really was it? Hey, what? Yeah, the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Perizzites, and all that kind of stuff. And but it didn't belong to God yet. God took it later. But why would God do that? Because he's downright an unfair God, right? Now, let's go on to verse 7, because after he made that stuff with verse 6, now he's going to say one more thing. By destruction. By destruction. And by a strong hand, he was destroyed. You got it? All right? He wasn't destroyed by the Romans by a strong hand. He wasn't destroyed by the priesthood with a strong hand. He wasn't destroyed by the Pharisees by a strong hand. He was destroyed by God, his Father. Is that hard to see? We see a picture here affecting the Messiah, not affecting people. All right? Oh. Verse 7 and 8. And he said, after he redeemed them, right, what's he going to do? I will take you for to me as a people. Once he's bought them, now they belong to him. And I will be to you an Elohim, and ye shall know that I came, that's what his word means, I am your Elohim that brings you out under the burdens of the Egyptians. Now it's a physical thing. Did God actually take you as an individual out from the burden of Egypt? No answer. Yes, 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 yes. Wow, the Egyptians were the worst people on the face of the earth, right? Okay. The book of Hebrews tells you something about it, right? Moses rejected Egypt, that is the luxury and the warmth and the beauty and the protection. And so it's like a sin. Paul called it a sin. It became like an act of a sin. So God is going to have to redeem us by getting rid of the burden, not just to these guys, but to us. Verse 8, I will bring you into the land concerning which I did swear to give to Abraham, Isaac, and to Jacob, and I will give it to you for an inheritance. I will do this. Now, there's four things, basically, he's promised here in this verse. Or that another verse for these parts. He's going to bring them out of the burdens. And he's going to rid them of the bondage. He's going to sneak them out of the bondage they're in. Let me ask you a question, a personal point. Did God, quote, sneak you out from under sin? How? One's a no, one's yes. How? When did he start doing that? When does God act on anybody's life? Is that moment all of a sudden you realize your sin? Or before any of that happened, he began to draw you toward him through his son, and then he introduces his son to you, and you say, here's the redemption. My, he's buying me back. I didn't know that. Where was I at? Now, when God reveals unto you what the burden or the sin is, that's because he is showing you what it is. If God did not show you what sin and transgression and iniquity is, you don't have sin, you don't have transgression, you don't have iniquity, and you're still in the world of blindness. When you come to your world, your life, by the time you realize, you know, God, I need to hear you, he's already been talking to you. Look at the prophecy. Look at Abraham was drawn from the land of Ur, and all of a sudden, God said, by the way, I want you to go over here. Do you think it was all of a sudden, here was Abraham down there tending his sheep, and all of a sudden God came down and said, by the way, I want you to leave here, go over there. Okay, I'll go. No. Did he do that to Noah? Which person seemed to be caught off guard suddenly that God said, oh, I know who you are now, God? No. God knew them well in advance. Look at Job. Knew well in advance. And he draw Job out of the burden that he was under, not knowing what that burden was. And God drew him out. Caught Job completely off guard. He did not know what the problem was. Yes, go ahead.
Can you repeat that?
What did I say?
Oh,
drawing out. Okay. That how God draws things out. He reveals them to you after he's been dealing with your mind and your spirit. We are to be part of God's spirit. How are you going to do that? He brings our spirit into awareness, draws us toward his son. Right? That's what it says. And then you see redemption. And all of a sudden you realize, oh my, he has actually drew me out, and I didn't even realize that's what he was going to do. But he did it. Right? So it's kind of like caught off guard, unaware, for us. We think, I need to repent of this thing. Wait, God says, about time. No. He says, now, the next step is, do you see what I paid for you to get out of this? Yes, I do. I said, do you like me because of that? Yes, I do. Yes.
So, what I hear you saying is that we are in a process of salvation.
Yes.
And that we, you know, like, say, for instance, we stop and take a turn away. Well, I'm sorry, but I kind of would look at that as that we would lose our salvation. Okay? I mean, if we turn away and we go the other direction, as long as we stay in a relationship with him and continue to say yes and continue to receive, then we are being saved. We are being saved. Salvation is a process.
That's correct. When you look at the house of Israel, it was a process that had to go through. 10 plagues to get them out of there, and then they had to go through it all for 40 years in the wilderness. All right? Some didn't make it. And that's why it's written. Why didn't they enter into the promised land? Because of unbelief. Because of unbelief. I'm sorry, what?
Do you believe we can lose our salvation then if we turn away?
According to the book of Hebrews. Well, I just quote Hebrews. He says yes.
He says yes.
He said yes. Where is that? Hebrews? Something else look up for me. I don't have... Hebrews what? 10:26. Thank you, Jeff. So, that's why the Apostle Paul said, we must work out our own salvation with fear and trembling. It's not, I know this is going to get on the internet, once saved, always saved is a lie. Alright, may you think it isn't, but in my personal opinion, it's a lie. Otherwise, we could go on and do whatever we want to do from that point on and say, to hell with God, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. You don't dare say that. That's my personal opinion. Anyway, he says, and will redeem them as he, with outstretched arm, with great judgment. Now, okay, when God used his son to redeem us, was it a great judgment? Or was it just a judgment? It was a great one. Go back there. We won't go back there today. But when he said, the judge of this world, this devil has now been judged. And there's other things he said. Now it took a great arm, great power, great strength to destroy that internal struggle that we have within ourselves. And the Messiah gave us one promise. I have overcome the world. Do not be afraid. Basically, I have overcome the devil. I've overcome the principality of this air. I've overcome him. I got more power than he does. Don't be afraid. He's not your problem. I'm your problem. Put it in other words, you know. And since he's done and he's redeemed us, we are very thankful for it, and we do our very best to say what says in the book of Hebrews. At times past, he spoke to the people in angels and in prophets and in visions, but now he speaks to us through his Son. Yes.
Okay, God says that he's the same yesterday, today, and he'll always be. That same issue is in Ezekiel 33.
Is the what now?
That same, the other witness of that same issue is Ezekiel 33.
Oh.
It depends on what you're doing.
Yeah, you're talking about three men there. That's true. It's very fascinating, but, you know, that's the Testament. Who pays attention to the Old Testament? Well, here you are. You're paying attention to the book of Genesis. I mean, in Exodus, rather. So, we have this one, and what this, Carrie brought out, is this one in verse 9. And Moses spoke unto them, the elders, of the children of Israel, but they hardened not, or did not hear of Moses. Why? Anguish, and it says, of spirit. I had to look that up. What does anguish in Hebrew mean? Oh. Short of spirit. Short of spirit. Now, you remember there the Messiah when he said, you three stay here, I'll go off and pray. They fell asleep. He said, wake up, wake up, wake up. Okay, stay awake, I'll go pray. Go pray. Come on. They're asleep. Well, let them sleep. He said, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Same story here. Has it ever happened to you? Let's continue. Basically, it means that their spirit was curtailed in Hebrew. They did not believe the words or trust the words of Moses. Why? What was their statement when they met Moses after they left Pharaoh? No straw. And we had to keep on working, and Moses, let God be the judge. You did it. And therefore, they're hardened their mind, their anguish, their spirit became shortened. It didn't last very long. That's what basic means. And because, you know, they were being killed, being beaten. That's why they went to Pharaoh, and later, and then all of a sudden Pharaoh started, okay, beat him. Hit him. Give him 40, 45, 60, 100 lashes. I don't care. Just beat him. And they'll do it. Now, if you were in that state, and you could be critical of the Israelites for having their, I can't hear you, Moses. I don't want to hear you, Moses. We say, you know, that wasn't a good thing to say to Moses. Well, it's easy to judge them, isn't it? Real easy. Now, after that statement, verse 10, God speaks again. And he says something very unusual. And he says, I want you to go to Pharaoh, and I want you to speak to him. And tell them, let my people go to the land that I have for them. Now we heard him say, let my people go. Go where? Go where? Go to the land that I promised in my agreement with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Okay? And he used a very unusual word. Right? And Moses said to Yahweh, saying, behold, the children of Israel have not hearkened unto me. How then shall Pharaoh hear me, who of uncircumcised lips? Now, he didn't say uncircumcised heart. Didn't say uncircumcised of the foreskin. Of lips. What does that mean? It's open for discussion. What is it you think it means? This is the only place in all of the entire Bible, in this chapter, it's repeated twice, uncircumcised. Moses' lips are uncircumcised. When he talked to the people of Israel, and was uncircumcised when he talked to the people, the Pharaoh and his men. That's a good one. Unable to convey. That sounds good. Anybody else have that idea? Something's not been cut away. Yes?
I was thinking of the uncircumcised lips, not knowing the covenant that he made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Have anything relations?
Okay. We'll move that that way. What's next? What's your thinking?
Circumcised is uncovered. He has covered lips. He can't understand. The person talking to him cannot understand him because his lips are like this and talking like this. He's covered.
All right. That's the simplicity of the matter. And Moses knew at this time God could undo his lips. Remember what he said in the mountain? Who has made the mouth? Moses. Ooh. Can God actually shut up a prophet and not let the prophet speak? Huh? Yes, of course. Physically, he can do that. And give me two examples. Zechariah, what's that one? Okay. But you see, God can seal the lips of a righteous man. He can seal the lips, yes. For a reason.
Jesus, when he was in the land, where they wouldn't listen to him.
And he couldn't do anything. So his words were cut. Were not cut. They just not heard, not listened to, and not responded to. And so Moses was saying, this is a losing battle. What am I here for? The people don't listen to me. I say what you said, and you said to say that what I said, and you said they would understand, because that's what he said on the mountain, right? Remember he said on the mountain they will hear you? He didn't tell them how long it would be before they hear him. He wanted them to hear him now. And Pharaoh? Ears completely cut. All right. We'll get finished thing. This part of the chapter and verse, now it's beginning, God begins to speak again in verse 13. Almost a different situation. Remember he said, go to Pharaoh. He says, how can I? Uncircumcised lips. Now we come here and he told something to Moses and to Aaron. What did he tell him? Verse 13. Yes.
Pharaoh.
Okay, that's good. But he has to give a command first to the first ones that did not hear him. Let's take a look at that. Moses and Aaron had to go and give command to whom first? The children of Israel. Now, as we keep reading this chapter, you will see what they were. Verse 14, the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, the sons and the families of Reuben. Verse 15, the sons of Simeon and the family of Simeon, and then the sons of Levi. And there's four of them listed in detail of who they were. So more Israelites, Levites went and were given a command. These were certain people in that house of Reuben and the house of Simeon that would hear and go do. And it appears that in the house of Levi, it took four of the houses to get there. And God spells them all out. Isn't that fascinating? First, he gave a command to them first. So that's what Moses and Aaron did. He went to them first, gave the command what God said, and God says, these are the ones I want you to pick. And so they were picked. And that's how it was done. Remember, these are four generations in the land of the line of Levi. I don't say generations of family. It means a period of events. Basically, in Hebrew, the word generation does not mean the next generation. It means a period of a time. And if I'm not mistaken, I think as the Apostle Paul talked about, that God is the creator of ages. He created this time limit, created that time limit, and this time limit. God is in charge of all time. Nothing happens without him instituting the time. Whether we think we override his time, we don't. The book of Psalms says God knows the exact number of months he has for each one of us. But he doesn't tell us, does he? How many months are you going to live? 3,000 months? 10,000 months? 40,000 months? You don't know, but God does. It's an interesting word, why it says months. We won't go there today. I'm not going to talk about that. And anyway, the farther down, verse 26, uses it and says, the translation in some of your translations says armies or host. The basic verb base for, quote, armies, or verb base for, quote, host, is to assemble. To assemble. Now, as we get deeper into this thing, you'll find out why God had Reuben and Simeon, just those two families and their families, responsible for something and not the rest of Israel. Not even the house of Ephraim or Manasseh, but Reuben and Simeon. Now, before we go there, I'm going to call a question soon. What does Reuben mean? Behold the son. Simeon means what? God hears. Oh, behold the firstborn. Did you hear? Or did God hear that? Because she named him that because God heard her. So as we get into this thing about as they leave in Egypt, it's very fascinating why those two men and their families were being picked. It wasn't by accident. To hear comes from Shema. Comes from the very same word as Shema. And then, verse 27, did you notice? I know Sesame DeMille put only Aaron and put only Moses. And I think sometimes they took Aaron out of the picture. And so all you saw was Moses in front of whom? That's not what it says in the 27th verse, does it? Those who were already given a command. Those very families were given a command. The leadership of those families were given a command. They didn't go, but Moses didn't go alone. Aaron didn't go alone. When Aaron and Moses weren't the only ones, all those names that were just listed there also went. And they spoke unto Moses, the king of Pharaoh, to bring the children of Israel from Egypt. These, meaning those that he had picked, Moses and Aaron, whom Yahweh appointed. Verse 20.
Went with Moses as well?
No, just Levites. Oh, well, no, they would have all gone. But this certain leadership. Always when it says the children of Israel, when not talking, you're not talking to every man, woman, child, and baby. So always talking to leadership.
Leader, whoever was appointed out
right.
Of that tribe.
Out of that tribe. Right. That's correct. Okay. All we're given is names of the tribes. We're not given names. Well, yeah, Aaron was there. And his sons was there. I don't remember. I'll have to go back and look at history again. Maybe some of those sons of ancient grandsons, I should say, might have been listed. I may have to look that up. But anyway, in verse 28, it says, "And it came to pass, on the day Yahuwah spoken to Moses in the land of Egypt." When did he speak to Moses in the land of Egypt? Now, we know he spoke to him on the mountain, right? Now, as time goes by, we're saying, there was a time, it came to pass a few days, months, we don't know. It doesn't mean years, it means in time, later on. He came back, he said something now. Since he's got the men that God wanted him to have, assign them and give them their charge, give them the responsibility, which is not written, but obviously God told Moses exactly what he wants these men to do, and they would reveal that information, and they heard that information, and they responded to that information. Now they're getting organized. It takes more than a day or two. Probably take maybe 7 days. Anyway, that's my thinking, which this has no value. And he said, now, it came to pass on the day, so after he's done all the pointing, which he already told him before, now he says, now I want you to go into and say something to Pharaoh. Tell him everything I said. And of course, Moses' response was, yeah, let's go. Hear me? What are you sending me there for? In one way, it's kind of funny because we look at this wonderful thing called hindsight and we have such beautiful insight now knowing how God's going to do something. But if you're Moses saying, it ain't working. Well, I don't know if he used that bad English. He didn't use English, but nonetheless. That's where we're kind of at now. So I'm not going to go any farther on that, and we'll talk about that much later next week. Yes.
From verse 17 down, there are a bunch of names of families.
Yes.
What does that mean?
Names of the families, names of the men. I didn't go through that. I got them written down in another form, and I didn't add them to this one because I ran out of time, to tell the honest truth.
Well, we can do it next week.
I can probably, yeah, go through the names next week. Yes. The names, yeah. Oh, okay. Those ones that were appointed. Yeah, given the command to.
I don't mean to back paddle here on the uncircumcised lips, but sometimes in our Bibles they'll have little connections to verses. And this one, in verse 12 there, about the uncircumcised lips, refers to Jeremiah 1:6. And that reads, and he said, O Lord, behold, I cannot speak, for I am a youth.
Oh, I could see that as a possible thing, but Moses was not mute. He did say the words. The what?
Jeremiah says, I cannot speak for I am a youth, not mute.
No, I understand that one, but that he's trying to back out of this assignment, and they didn't go with it. Okay. But we're talking here that Moses was 90 years old. He was no kid. Jeremiah was a kid. He was under the age of 20. That's pretty young. They give a person under the age of 20 any kind of responsibility. They're trying to figure out, okay, mom, dad, what's for breakfast? Anyway, beyond that point. It's like Samuel, as a kid. All of a sudden, God dealt with a kid, not a man. Wow, that's really odd. God's not very often Jesus deals with kids, but we have examples where he does. Any more statements? Any more thoughts? I'm sorry, what? Circumcision means there's something that is, let's see, put in other words, that is hiding the circumcision. The openness. How do you talk to someone? Have you ever met someone? Try to convince to them anything out of that Bible. And there are still not. And you're saying, well, I didn't do a very good job. No, if God has, quote, given you uncircumcised lips to that one. Now, Moses didn't say his uncircumcised lips to everyone. Just to the leadership of Israel, which they later gave command, and to Pharaoh. Just those two. It should teach us that we can't do what we think we can do unless God brings it about. And God was not going to bring about for Pharaoh to understand it until they were out in the wilderness for 3 days. And he says, what's happened? Even he didn't get it at that point in time. But anyway. It's something to sealed up, you know. Sheesh. It's kind of hard to explain without having going to deep depth detail of what circumcision really does to a grown man.